Hi, I'm Amanda Lang, a developer evangelist from Microsoft. This is my video blog, and today I'm going to be going over a talk that I gave at CodeMash earlier this year about designing a game for mobile platforms. The talk that I gave at CodeMash was about an hour long, so I'm just going to hit the highlights, and if you want to see more, I'll link you down below to my slide share that contains my slides with notes so you can go over it in further detail. What I really want to talk about today is just a few things that I've noticed in mobile games that are successful on the app market and how you can make your game stronger with a couple of tips. So one of the things that's really important about mobile game development is that you have to use more of an agile development process, which means you have to iterate a lot in the game development cycle that you're doing. That's because when you make games, you're going to learn a lot every single time you make something new. And when you're making a new game, it's important to learn from your mistakes, move on, and then make something better next time. Anytime you see a company that did really, really well with one game title, chances are good that they've made a lot of game titles. Even the Flappy Bird developer made a lot of games before Flappy Bird, and he made a lot of games after Flappy Bird. And if you look at this list, and these are just like clicked from Wikipedia, you can see there's like a bunch of different versions of the Angry Birds. So on this next slide, this shows a bunch of different games that maybe you never heard of, and this is from the same source that I got those lists of other games from. These are all titles made by Rovio, who's the company that made Angry Birds, before they made Angry Birds, and you probably haven't heard of most of them. And that's because once you have a hit game, people might not remember all the other games that you made to get to that point in skill. But the fact is that the more games you make, the more practice you have making the games. I like to look at it this way. The App Store relies a lot on luck. So I use a D20 here because I'm a Dungeons & Dragons type of gamer. But any kind of die, think about how many times you have to roll a die before you get a good roll. And if you think about it in terms of how many times do I have to roll a dice before I hit a 20, you realize that the odds are better the more games you make, because that just means you're getting more skilled, more talented, and it's just more chances to stand out. Something that is very important in game design is that you design for something that's touchable, because you're going to be creating something for a mobile platform. You're going to be creating it for a mobile device with a touch screen. And so if you're not going to create for a console or something like that, you want to be sure that you have design that's touchable. So everything from sliding blocks and sliding candy really work very well on mobile. And this is 2048. I'm going to talk a little bit about it in a minute further down, so don't get too attached to seeing it yet. It's okay to have a game that's an action game, but there's a couple different ways that you can do it. You can either have it be the avatar isn't directly controlled, so on the left, the game Cannibal, where the avatar is controlled by a tap of the finger, but you don't have to steer him in any other way. The game on the right is Super Hexagon, and in Super Hexagon, the avatar is a little tiny triangle, so you're actually moving the screen around the avatar, so it's a slightly different mode of control. If you have to do something like a virtual D-pad on the screen, it's going to be harder for your users because when they tap on stuff, they're not going to be able to control the character as well. So looking back at some of the games we looked at earlier, like Flappy Bird and Candy Crush, one of the things that's also common among these games is that they have really bright and friendly colors. So even a game that's a little bit more hardcore, like Clash of Clans, or this is a Game of War here, they still have bright, friendly colors. They have a lot more density going on the screen, but they're still very colorful. They have lots of greens, lots of reds and blues. It's very juicy, and it kind of makes you want to touch it. This is Monument Valley. You can see that even the neutral colors, they're colorful. There's blue, there's yellow. This is what we call a warm, cool contrast, which is really important to kind of give a sense of an outdoor feeling. So you kind of feel like there's a sun beaming down on this, and then there's like a cold shadow that's sort of highlighting the background. Those kind of contrasts can make your colors really pop. Another thing you want to be very careful about with colors, and I got this screenshot from this game UI by example, so this is another cool article to check out. But another thing you want to be careful about with colors is the fact that some people are colorblind. So if your game relies a lot on color matching, you have to match two things the exact same color, a game like Candy Crush will usually do different shapes as well. So if it's just colors and you try to run it through color accessibility, you might run into the fact that colors don't necessarily give you all the information that you need if you can't see colors very well. Here's an example from the game Peggle. And what Peggle does is they actually give you a colorblind mode that makes the colors a little bit more different and distinct. And you can see they actually put arrows on the green because green is a hard color for colorblind people to see a lot of times. And that means that if you can see the triangle, you know that's a green peg, and that'll help you play the game even if you can't see the colors. So when I say bright colors, what I really mean is a variety of different things, because not all bright colors are created equal. If you look in Photoshop, you've got this hue, saturation, and brightness. And this shows the difference between hue, saturation, and brightness on your screen. Hue is what color it is. Saturation is how much gray is in it. And brightness is how light or dark is it. Use a combination of these factors to actually decide which colors to use in your game. So a desaturated color is good for the background. So you can see the saturation on this particular color is low. It's closer to gray because it's going to be in the background of the shot. A brighter color, something important to click on, is going to be a lot more saturated because that's the juicy thing that you want to click. And if you want to get another look at this picture, it's actually on my blog as well. If you saturate all the colors to 100%, it looks kind of gross and bad because you just can't tell what's important and what isn't. The background is ugly and noisy. I edit this really quickly, so it looks blocky too, but you get the idea. It's just really noisy and it just washes everything out. So I kind of enjoy the Death Star simulator, and even in the Death Star, colors are not 100% desaturated in the background. There's actually a little bit of blue. The saturation is higher in the gameplay portion, and then the UI part that you don't actually click on is the part where it's totally gray. So it's just something to think about, like even something that you think might be gray, maybe not. You can get away with a lot richer, more lush designs if you happen to have like a higher quality 3D art in your game. If you've got a really good artist and they know their stuff, hire them and let them do their thing. But if you're, you know, not sure about what colors and stuff to use, get some advice. So once you have a game, you might be wondering how to make money, and that can be a pretty tricky thing. One thing that you can do is just sell your game for a price, which is the pay once and play model. That's pretty easy to figure out. You just decide how much you think your game is worth. It could be anywhere from $15 to $10 to $2. Most people don't recommend pricing all the way down at just $1, but you can choose whatever price you think the game is worth. Other people choose ad-supported. Ad-supported is nice because you can continue to make money as long as somebody's playing your game. The most common type of way to make really big money is the freemium model, where the game is free, but there's something in the game that you pay money for to get. This is how you make probably the biggest revenue, and these are the games that seem to do the most well and be the most famous. On the other hand, if you're going to do this kind of model, you have to know upfront that that's the kind of game that you want to make, because you can't just add monetization to it later. If you're designing a game based around the freemium model, you have to know that from the very beginning so you can design the things that people are going to purchase in the game. This is from Flurry Analytics, and it's just looking at iOS and Android right now, but whales are your biggest customers. The biggest customers make about half the revenue. So of all the game players that play your game, of the ones that pay, they're going to pay less than $10, and you're going to have at least half the revenue coming from players that pay more than $10. It kind of makes sense, but this is a smaller percentage of players paying a lot bigger amount of your money. So it's something to keep in mind. If you're selling it in-game currency, a nice trick is to have something like a value pack. People will actually be willing to spend more. And you also want to change up the graphics for your in-game currency. So they do all these cool banners and kind of make it shiny. So people have this temptation of, oh, I really want to buy this one that's cheaper. It's at a discount. Candy Crush Saga didn't used to have the little banners on there. They actually added that kind of recently. It's just a way that people realize that they're getting a better deal. And it kind of makes them think about spending a little bit more money than they normally would. Discoverability is the biggest challenge in the App Store. If you're really interested in having a very popular game, you do have to compete with a lot of flashy games that are out there. I recommend a very clear, easy-to-read icon and putting a lot of games in the store. The more different types of Oreo or orange juice that there are, the more shelf-facing space that those particular products have. And that could be the same thing with your game. The more games you put out, the more shelf space you have and the more chance you have that somebody's going to notice you in the store. I'm going to leave you with a thought about a game that I really enjoy, which is Threes. Threes is actually on Xbox as well, but it started out as a mobile game. It's not 2048, but 2048 was a game that sort of was a hit for a while, and the games are kind of similar. But 3's actually has a really different design that's a lot more elegant. It's got really cute sound design, and it's got, like, really clever little characters. So that's one of the reasons that it's a really cool game, and it's something that you should check out if you haven't. Just to keep in mind that to make a really quality game can take some time, and you want to be careful because sometimes out there are people that'll be interested in your idea. But if you have a really good game and you know it's going to be good, it can prevail and do well. So there's a couple of things to think about. Iterate your game a lot. Design for a touch-friendly environment. Make your game itself be friendly with lots of cute graphics. Some way that people have into the game that's either its color, if it's something bright, something that makes people interested in clicking and touching it. And be sure that you design your game with your monetization in mind. Here's me, and here's all my info. Thanks for watching my video, and have a great day.